Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is Matt Spiegel and Barry Rosner combining to form one Lawrence Holmes this evening on 670 The Score. And we are here for another hour with you. Julie DeCaro will be up after us as she will take you to the Grobber, right? Yeah, Les Grobstein in at midnight. I heard Bob Verdi on with Les Grobstein the other night, overnight, late, as I was driving home from something. And it was pretty neat hearing the two of them talk about Stan Mikita.
You know what's great about that is Verdi loves Les.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
And it, I mean, in of course, a perverse way. Is that if he's driving home late or if he's up in the middle of the night,
yeah,
he loves the show. He just adores the show because of how bizarre it is,
mm-hmm.
because of how unbelievably strange it is.
I wonder if Verdi got as much time as a usual caller gets.
An hour?
But I mean, but it was really cool to hear those two guys talking from a knowledgeable, you know, experiential place about Mikita and watching him play and what kind of player he was.
Yeah, maybe we could save a few minutes in this hour to talk about Stan a little bit.
I'd like to.
I do want to get back to White Sox cookies. If we have finished the conversation about actual mm-hmm. cookies.
Yeah. Actually, we're not quite finished.
Okay. I know we got a tweet.
Well, yeah, we got a tweet of consequence because before we get back to White Sox cookies, you like the thin and crispy cookies, as do I. And you were assuming that it's a ratio of how much flour it dictates the thin and crispy cookie as opposed to, say, the soft and chewy or the light and cakey. And the truth is,
I don't like light and cakey.
Me neither. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Not a big fan of soft and chewy either. I'll take soft and chewy over light and cakey.
I'll take soft and chewy if they're a little overdone, frankly, because then at least I'll get the sides that'll be crispy.
Yeah, it's such a tease though to just have the sides be crispy.
I've thrown out the middle
when the whole thing could be crispy.
I've thrown out the middle of many a chocolate chip cookie in my life, Barry. I've eaten around the edge, and just tossed the middle.
I'm not wasting my time with all that
screw
light
you.
Stuff.
Calories are, I must prioritize. And
well,
this
yeah,
light
I mean,
stuff
if you're going to have the calories, they might as well be the way you want them.
That's what I'm saying. You know, how many calories can a man have? Actually, don't answer that. So anyway, but.
You're Joe West.
Again. Content. He's a buffoon. He's a terrible umpire. He's a jackass. And you go for the surface stuff. It's insulting. Which I think is exactly what you're going for.
Pretty much exactly what I'm going for. Yeah. Okay. Can't help it.
So what makes them thin and crispy is more butter. And I think that's awesome because we just talked about how you can't have butter in your house. And yet the kind of cookie you love, it's dictated by more butter and, ironically enough, the sugar. Like extra sugar and extra butter. Not the flour is what makes the cookie thin and crispy.
Well, do we know that for sure? I mean, I see the difference in the amount of butter and the amount of sugar. I see that. But what's not there
if we don't
is
know
the
it,
amount of flour.
Well, yes, it is. It's below that on the bottom half. All of the recipes have the same amount of flour. That's the whole point. I forget. The culinarily ignorant Barry Rosner, have you ever read a recipe before?
Never in my life. I tried to make cupcake brownies with the girls once,
uh-huh.
and not only did they burn, but they stuck to the pan, but the middle of it was really good. What we could actually get out of the pan,
yeah.
which we then had to throw away, that part was good. The part we could dig out was good. We basically scooped out the middle of it, and then we threw away the pan before Mom got home because there was going to be no cleaning that. The kids were little. They thought it was fine. We all enjoyed what we were able to get from it. It just wasn't a lot.
That's tremendous. All right, so yes, the flower's not the flower doesn't change. That was kind of my whole point.
I'm skeptical.
That's all right. All right, White Sox cookies. Talk to me about Eloy and Kopech.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
At all this year?
I don't think so.
Bruce Levine wrote that he thinks Eloy is coming.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I'm not speaking from direct knowledge of anything. I just don't believe this is something Rick Hahn would do because it's the wrong thing to do.
Well, let me ask you this.
Because it serves no purpose for this team or for this rebuild. The long-term view is 7 is more than 6.
Yeah.
That is the responsible thing to do. I would like to see them. White Sox fans would like to see them. We'd all like to see them. But it doesn't serve the rebuild any purpose. You are in year 2. If you are lucky, this will be a thing in year 5. If things go really well.
Sure.
So why would you start the clock on these guys now? There's no reason to do it. It's just none.
Look, obviously, logically, from a team building and organizational building perspective, you're 100% right. Okay, so I'm gonna devil's advocate with you here on a couple levels.
Yeah,
while admitting, of course, that logically, you know, it's from a team building perspective and control. Yes, a couple questions.
Okay.
For you to swat away with your logic sword, if you will. Although you wouldn't swat it, you'd swipe at it, I suppose, and maybe even slice it if it were a sword. I'm still working on the metaphor. I'm talking as I do it. That can be a challenge.
There's plenty of time. It's not like we got to be somewhere. What do we got to do? We can't spare 15 minutes.
Does the fact that you are an organization who is, who's unlikely to spend the big time free agent money or contract extension money that an Eloy Jimenez might demand in year 5 or year 6 where he's still under the control. Like, you might be the kind of organization that's going to have to trade that. Or like, does the White Sox sort of unique financial place of where they will be by year 5 or year 6 come into your head at all? You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be big market behemoth that's going to pay all their guys. They're more than likely going to have to make the tough choices that the Royals made or that the Rays have had to make.
I believe, first of all, that they have banked a lot of money the last couple of years.
Certainly.
And will use that money in the future not only to sign their own guys but to go outside the organization and fill in much the same way that the Cubs did. I believe they will do that.
Okay, I'm just asking.
I'm not saying they'll do it now.
If their historical... Furthermore,
their history tells you that they might go Evan Longoria on Eloy Jimenez and sign him for 7 or 8 years before he even gets to the big leagues the way that the Rays did with Evan Longoria. But their history says what they did with Chris Sale and what they did with
Quintana and what
they did with Eaton and what they did with Tim Anderson is
absolutely
something they will look to do over and over and over again.
So we swat that one away.
I think I don't think we're swatting again with the sword. I believe we're using it to kill something.
Okay.
We're using it to jab
slice
it right through the heart.
Okay.
With it.
Right, because 7 remains more than 6. Even if they sign him to a deal in year 3, the leverage that you're using is the fact that 7 remains more than 6.
Regardless of when
they
you
pay
do
him
whatever it is that you do, you're still starting the clock before you have to, and you're moving up the time frame in which you would have to use that extension.
Okay, so that's one that you have stabbed in the heart with your sword. Number 2.
There's got to be a better word than stab, though.
Stubbed. no, stabbed it is.
With a sword?
Yeah.
You would plunge it.
Okay.
Plunge. Deep into the heart of.
No, yeah, pretty sure you stab, don't you?
Okay, yeah, stab doesn't seem like a...
Stab seems like a dagger kind of thing.
It just seems too weak for something as big and awful as a sword.
Do you know what you put a sword in? You know, would you put a sword inside?
A sword holder?
A sheath.
That's one, but there's a better name for it. I learned this because I used to talk about my Jay Cutler conversational sword, where because eventually, after about 5 years, I said, you know what? I'm done. I'm laying down my Jay Cutler conversational sword. I will not have that talk. But I'm not laying it down. I put it back in my scabbard, because that's called a scabbard that the Three Musketeers and others wear.
Is that something you get from a disease? It sounds scabbard? It sounds bad.
No, that would be a scab or scabies of some kind. But scabbard's a cool word, though. I like that word.
How about impaled?
Yeah, sure. It's not bad. So you've impaled.
That's from Dr. Gary Bayless.
Thank you, Gary.
He chimes in with the impaled.
I like the Bayless.
But don't
family.
You impale yourself? Can you impale
all sorts
others?
Of things? Well, Vlad the Impaler. You know. By the way, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now is hitting 462 at AAA.
Yeah, and you don't see them starting the clock yet.
Okay.
Although they may. They may yet.
Is there?
They have absolutely no.
Is there any wisdom at all?
Yeah.
To the idea that it is in Eloy Jimenez's best interest as a player and person to give him a month and a half of big league experience at this point. I think there is some.
Yeah, you could make that case.
Right?
You could make that case. You could also at the same time say, so what? So it starts April 15th instead of September 1st. What does it really matter? Would it benefit him? Would it benefit him for next year? Sure, to get a month of at bats. What does it really matter? It doesn't really matter.
No,
I mean, he'll just get him next year instead.
And he seems very mentally strong and relaxed.
Seems
very mature.
Seems to
he?
Not matter.
Oh,
Chris Getz used that word, mature.
Oh, and mature is absolutely the word for that guy.
Barry, as a White Sox fan. One thing I would say, I do agree with your seven is bigger than six. I checked that out. It's still real.
The math proves out, and it's
every time.
You know, it's there's been extensive work put into this. It proves out.
But the thing is, I think by holding him back until April, you send some messages down the line to Eloy himself, who's OPSing over 1,000. You say, hey, man, that's not good enough. We're better. We're doing service time things over what I said as Rick Hahn, who said that, you know, some of the greats will push the timelines forward more than when we're ready to go. And also down the line to a guy like Rutherford or Mike Rodolfo, who's hurt right now. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, guys, OPSing 1,000, you're not ready for the majors yet. We're going to be playing these service time games with you. So those guys are like, man, I'm OPS in 800. What do I got to do to get to the league?
Yeah.
That type of thing, that
well, it's
ripple
the same,
effect down the line.
It's the same thing, Herbie, that the Cubs did with Chris Bryant, and it hasn't affected anybody else in their organization in that regard. I think if you're a player in today's game,
you have
to understand that it's not a service time game. I object to the phrasing because as an organization, and I've always been a player's guy, understand that. I'm a player's guy.
Teams don't have much leverage
anymore. I believe that the players really messed up, by the way, and the players' union and Tony Clark really fouled up the last two CBAs, but that's for another time. I'm a player's guy. I've always been on their side in any of these labor disagreements. I believe the players should get everything they possibly can. I don't think they should ever give anything back. But the fact is, as Matt just said, as an organization, you have so little opportunity to exert your control over a player. And it's for these guys will all be Super 2 guys, which means their arbitration will start sooner. They'll start their arbitration after, 2 plus 154, whatever it is. So their arbitration will start on time at 3 years. And I believe you got to take advantage of this because after that, you got nothing. You got absolutely nothing. And if you don't, use the control as an organization while you have it, which is completely legal by the terms of the CBA, which you signed off on as a players' union. And it's not a loophole. It's just part of the CBA. If you don't do it now, you will not be able to do it again. And soon enough, the player will have you over a barrel, and you better do it now.
And the other thing is, Herbie, that by the time some of those guys get close to the bigs, theoretically, you're in a position where you're playing better and maybe even contending, and you'll throw some of those restrictions away as you bring up guys to help yourself right away. Like, did Ian Happ's service time ever come up even once as he was being dealt with the Cubs? No, because they're in the middle of their winning window, and you bring your guy up as soon as he can help you. So the possibility of this being good for Jimenez to come up, you could grant that you could make a case there.
Yes.
And then is it so uniformly stupid and outrageous? And again, remember that logically I agree with you on the premise. Is it so outrageous to think that a team and an organization fighting for attention and attendance and buzz and happiness were to actually give their fans something exciting? Is that just incredibly stupid considering the alternative?
I wouldn't use that word.
Me neither.
I wouldn't use that
word. Me neither.
I would use the word irresponsible. And as the steward, the chief steward of your organization, it is your job to not fall victim to that emotion or to think about handing out cookies.
Right.
Because you have a long-term plan in mind. You don't know how long it's going to take. You have hopes. You have calendars in your mind, but you really don't know. And it is your responsibility to be the bad guy, however distasteful it may be. The Bryant thing was insane. It was insane in this town.
But that was really only 10 days, because the end of the year before.
And then it was gone forever.
Yeah.
Then it was gone forever, never to be spoken of again.
But this Eloy thing is gonna be the rest of this year, plus then the beginning of next year in a way.
But
it is. I know that's your job, is to be dispassionate and to fend off those who are letting the emotions get the best of them. I know. I'd be a terrible general manager. I know that.
I agree.
But it's also what Rick Hahn said, saying some guys tend to force the issue.
Yeah.
If what Eloy is doing isn't forcing the issue, what is forcing the issue?
Yeah, well, that's why semantically it's dangerous to talk. It's just dangerous, when especially if you know that you're going to do what makes the most sense for the organization. That's why things like the checklist become a meme, you know? That's why everybody has
checking,
like,
the boxes.
Yeah, you know, you're checking the boxes here. Okay, maybe Michael Kopech's box to check was going to see the Bean, right? Like, it came up on Instagram last night. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's when you talk, you can get in a lot of trouble, even if you're as good at talking as Rick Hahn is.
It doesn't mean that that's not true. It doesn't mean that some guys won't force the issue or move up a timeline. It doesn't mean that that can't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know this to be the case. My belief is that Hahn will do the right thing and not bring either one of those guys to the big leagues this year or out of spring training. But I don't have a fact to back that up. It's just my belief.
670 The Score is where you are. It's Matt Spiegel and Barry Rosner in for Lawrence Holmes until the top of the hour. Tom and Downers Grove will get you a next segment when we come back. The Bears are done. They've lost 30-27 to the Bengals. Bears suck. Season over. We're here for you, though. I want to gauge your interest gauge exactly what you think the trade value is of someone in the baseball universe in this town. And if you want to tell us what the Bears looked like, you're welcome to do so.
We didn't watch it.
Didn't watch it.
We don't have it on. There's only one TV working, and that's been on the Golf Channel all night. We have three TVs in the studio. One of them has that fabulous Comcast box that comes up that says,
"One
moment,
please." One moment, please.
You know, if you've had
this moment's been lasting 3 hours and 24 minutes.
If you've seen that at home, that it's time to throw a brick through the television, because you know it's never to go away. The other TV is not on.
It's not on.
The one in the middle has been on the Golf Channel since we got here, and I didn't do it.
No,
I didn't put it there.
You didn't do it, but I hope you've been enjoying some hot big screen SD Golf Channel action while we sit here.
Well, if we had a big screen TV and it was HD, then I probably would be.
It's Spiegs and Rosner on The Score. We'll talk with you more next. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Coach Fitz and the Cats return to Ryan Field after a 10-win campaign last year. Don't miss out on matchups with Michigan, Notre Dame, and more. Season and single-game tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. Tom is in Downers Grove and has been waiting patiently on The Score. Thanks for waiting, Tom. You're on. How are you?
Good. Great. Great, guys. First off, good to hear you guys together. And, Matt, it's really, really wonderful to hear you again.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Nice to be here.
I really mean that. Thanks. My question, in fact, this ties in perfectly with what you guys were talking about before the break. It's about Chris Bryant and the injury that he's had for a while now. And I was wondering, do you think the fact that Scott Boras is his agent, and there may be some underlying resentment about the service time issue, might be when Boras might put something in his ear, kind of take his time, don't risk, you know, what he might have to offer for his next contract a few years from now. In other words, kind of, you know, that might be some anger about how the Cubs play with him with service time, to kind of take your sweet time to make sure that you're perfect.
I don't give that any credence whatsoever.
No, not even the tiniest little bit.
Because Chris Bryant wants to play.
Yep.
They're in the middle of a winning window. He's a hell of a ball player. He loves being on this team.
He wants to win the World Series.
He wants to win the World Series. He wants to play.
Yeah. I am concerned about the injury.
So am I.
You know how I feel about sliding head first, and that was a head first slide. And when you extend your shoulder like that, you are asking to injure yourself, and that is how he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is they're not going to tell you this, but my guess is he probably at least mildly dislocated his shoulder, which causes some tearing of the labrum, some fraying of the labrum, and that's where his pain is when he extends the bat. Every time that you dive head first, if you hit hard enough, and he's a big man, and you hyperextend your shoulder, there's some subluxing there, and by definition, you're probably dislocating even to a very tiny extent, and therefore you're doing some damage to the labrum. That's probably where his pain is.
That makes sense. And I'll tell you what really concerned me and still concerns me is that after saying that it was not affecting his swing for a couple of weeks there, when they finally put him back on the DL, I was sitting there in the interview room there, and when Madden admitted, yes, it was affecting his swing. It affected the finish of his swing. And you know what a Chris Bryant finish looks like after that beautiful, natural uppercut swing that he and his pop worked on, modeling it after Ted Williams as they did. You know what it looks like when he finishes with that shoulder and how high it is. And he said, which Madden admitted, that he was adjusting his finish just a little bit to avoid the pain.
Sure.
And if you're doing that, then who the hell knows when you're thinking about that in the middle of your swing or when you're trying to make that adjustment? Already you're thinking too much. Already you're screwing things up. And you're putting yourself in danger also of hurting yourself more and in a different way.
Well, I'll go you one further. Anytime he dives, there's going to be pain. Anytime he extends with his left arm and dives, even for, you know, playing defense, there's going to be pain. And he could be... If there is, if I'm right, and there's some minor problem there with his labrum, he's making it worse every single time.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact, and I won't do it with my left arm because I can't, because I don't have that range of motion anymore, but when he raises his arm high to catch a line drive, that's going to hurt as well. And every time you do that, there's more risk of dislocation there.
Uh-huh.
So we got multiple
factors here. We got the factor of the injury itself could get worse. The pain of doing normal baseball things could bother him. And then getting your swing out of whack. You know how freaking precise every little detail is physically having your swing?
You could shorten it and become more of a right field, center field kind of guy so that you don't have to completely extend like that. But if you do, pitchers are going to notice that right away too.
Mm-hmm. And eat you up.
Yep, they're going to keep everything inside on your hands, and they're going to make it difficult for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say there's good reason to be concerned about that.
All right, let me ask you this, because we used to have this conversation quite a bit in terms of which young Cub position player would you trade? You remember these conversations when Soler was still here even, right? You trade Jorge Soler, you trade Javier Baez, you trade Addison Russell, you trade Kyle Schwarber, trade Albert Almora. Which one of those guys? Who would you get the most for? Who's got the most value? Who would you send on their way? Who makes the most sense to keep, et cetera? Soler goes and gets you Wade Davis. That was a terrific trade.
Yeah.
For what Davis brought you. Even though
plus Soler didn't have any place to play here.
Right. So that's great. Didn't even mention Gleyber Torres in there. That one obviously stings a little bit, but Chapman, a huge part of your World Series run.
It shouldn't sting at all.
So it shouldn't sting at all.
You don't win the World Series without Aroldis Chapman. Right. It's a huge price to pay, but a price you're willing to pay.
Eloy and Dylan Cease both are stinging like crazy right now in the theoretical, while you're watching Quintana give you a pretty damn mediocre full year as a Cub here. But now where we stand... And you can add Ian Happ back into that mix, right? Because he could trade Ian Happ. You know, it is so clear in a way that the guy to trade right now is Addison Russell. I mean, it's like, of all of those in that conversation, to me, what a disappointment right now at this point for Addison Russell on several levels for me. There's the personal level and some of the stuff they've had to talk to him about off the field. And then there's the fact that his power has seemingly just gone away. There's the fact that he spent almost all of last year in chaos at the plate, like disorganized at bats, disorganized approach. And there's Javier Baez's obvious defensive brilliance at shortstop. If you just want to put him there, you could just go ahead and put him there, and you got options at second base.
Put him anywhere.
But what actually is the trade value now for an Addison Russell who has seemingly regressed? I know he's so young still. He's 24, though. So what is the trade value of a 24-year-old Addison Russell who has regressed in terms of power? And what is I'm trying to look for the contract control here of Addison Russell, about where we are. He's ARB eligible in 2019, not free agent.
What's his
eligible,
service time? What's
2022.
What's his service time coming into this year?
A service time 2.167.
So he's going to be 3 + 167, so nearly 4 years.
Nearly 4 years.
But
tell people what that means, because I like to think of it as free agent eligible 2022.
Yeah, he's going to be 3 plus, so you've got 3 more years guaranteed.
And those are all arbitration eligible years.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the trade value of 3 years of control for a 24-year-old Addison Russell right now?
I first have to try to understand why we're talking about it. What is it that you're trying to get, and when are you trying to get it?
Off season.
And your plan is to move Baez to short, and what are you going to do at second then?
Happ and or Zobrist, and maybe even a little David Bodie.
Okay with mediocrity up the middle then, at second base.
At second.
Because that's not going to be very good.
Yeah, I'm making a defensive concession at second base.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
Okay,
I don't like the idea of defensive concessions. Not when you have a defensive infield that won you a World Series, in reasonable part too because of how good they were defensively. So I'm not a huge fan of that concession.
Okay,
I understand your concerns over the offense at this point. Completely get it,
and the concerns over the diminishing trade value from what once felt like a treasure trove of trade opportunities.
Yeah, and what do you what would you be using him for? Are you going to try to get some young starting pitching, or I mean that's probably not going to happen. So you're probably not going to get that. I guess I don't really understand where you're going with it, like what you want to do with him, like what you want to accomplish in that, and then how you're going to replace him.
Well, I'm going to replace him by putting Baez there and then making the defensive concession, which you're not a fan of. In terms of what I'm going to get, it looks like you might need more starting pitching. You always need more starting pitching.
You're not going to get good, young, controllable starting pitch.
That's right. You're not going to get that right now for Addison Russell.
Well, you're not getting that for anybody. Nobody trades that. Nobody trades good, young, controllable starting pitching. In fact, I don't really understand what Pittsburgh did for Chris Archer.
That was ridiculous, especially considering they gave up on McCutcheon.
I don't understand
the plan.
They
gave up on their veterans.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they doing? I don't know. You know, Chris Archer has ace stuff, but he's not an ace. I don't know if he ever will be. Mm-hmm. I don't really get what they were doing or why they did it now. Although there is the control part of that, which matters to them. But they, you know, the guys they gave up, wow, big price to pay. So you're not getting young, controllable starting pitching. So are you giving him up to get a guy maybe for a year who tries to, who could help you win a World Series so next year?
Well, is there a stretch run bat for Adrian Beltre? You want Adrian Beltre to plug in a third if Chris Bryant is done for the year?
I ain't trading Addison Russell for Adrian Beltre.
3 years of Addison Russell for a month and a half of Adrian Beltre?
No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I think that's a little
bit. It'd be fun to have Adrian Beltre here.
I would enjoy
that.
That'd
be fun. I like watching him play baseball. But no, that's not a good idea. Are you trading him in the offseason for 1 year of a starting pitcher?
Do you think you'd get 1 year of a good starting pitcher for 3 years of control of Addison Russell? Probably.
Depends how he finishes the year. Depends how he performs in the postseason. I don't know what's happening with him.
There was a time, 2 years ago, he might have been the absolute top of that list of trade value because of the position.
Certainly in the conversation. Yeah, right. Yeah. Great defensive shortstop who could also hit you a grand slam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'm completely I kind of need to know why you want to do it and what you're hoping to accomplish. And you need to give me a better idea of what you're going to do at second base.
All right, let me write this down. If I'm hearing you correctly, what I hear you say is, Spiegel, you piece of effing crap, take this back to the shop and tweak this thought and make it more sensible before you bring this kind of garbage to the airwaves and waste my time.
But signed, what if it was Rosner. For, like, to give a person like Ian Happ an actual position to play? Clear some space up. Because that guy's like a fourth outfielder right now, wasting away on the Cubs bench, not getting the representative 500 at-bats each year.
Then maybe he's the guy you're supposed to be trading. Because I'm not that interested in creating space for Ian Happ right now. I mean, he's not good defensively anywhere you put him. He's running pass patterns in left. Forget about center field.
He still gets preferential treatment over Almora, though.
Yeah, and I know Albert is suffering right now, but Tony, you're right. It's like he's just never going to be Joe's guy no matter what happens, And I know he's going through a real bad time offensively. I'm not trying to diminish that, but it sure took him a long time to get his opportunity. And that's, again, part of being a young guy at the big league level. He gets off to the great start, and pitchers are adjusting to him, and now it's time for him to adjust again.
It's Spiegs and Rosner here on 670 The Score. We'll come back and talk a little more stuff. Huh? There's a tease, huh? Professional.
I got to find out about something I saw falling out of your bag, and I need to know why there were so many 18-year-olds in your apartment.
18-year-old girls.
Yeah.
Actually, probably 20-year-old girls.
Okay.
20 to 21-year-old girls. I had 9 of them in my apartment. I'll tell you why that happened.
I probably need to know why.
I'll give you a little context on that. When we come back at 670 The Score. Welcome back in on 670 The Score. Matt Spiegel and Barry Rosner here with you for another 10 minutes or so. Julie DeCaro at 10 o'clock. Did you see what Mookie Betts did tonight?
He had another monster night.
He's unbelievable. He's just unbelievable. Mookie Betts tonight hit for the cycle, and in his fifth and only other plate appearance, he walked. So he hit for the cycle and walked. Just saw Matt Trueblood on Twitter tweet that he's the 15th player in the history of baseball to do that with five plate appearances, hit for the cycle and walk.
Is there much doubt about him being the MVP of the American League?
J.D. Martinez will have something to say for it from just a few feet away.
What about the best player in the game?
Mike Trout will have something to say about it.
How about
Jose Ramirez? Have you seen Jose Ramirez's stats over the last .162?
And he got off to a slow start.
Oh, my God. It's outrageous.
Yeah,
and
Herbie, they should just name the award after Mike Trout. Just name the award after him and stop wasting everybody's time with that. I mean, you could give it to him every year. Absolutely give it to him every year.
I think Mookie has a very lovable profile as well. Great personality.
And his team's on pace to win 184 games. It's a lot of games.
Yeah.
It's a lot of wins.
I think there's a legit chance that he and J.D. Martinez, though, split some votes and Trout or even Jose Ramirez sneaks in. All right, not Ramirez, but Trout. There's a chance that he sneaks in. Mookie, every time I see Mookie, I think of Theo Epstein because they were blown away by young Mookie Betts as a prospect who they drafted. That's Theo and Jed and Jason McLeod did draft. They
I don't think McLeod was actually there.
Oh, was McLeod and Hoyer, were they in San Diego?
I believe so, yeah.
Thank you.
But that was Theo, what was that, fifth round? Mookie Betts? I'm looking it up. Go ahead.
Yes, fifth round.
Fifth
2011
round.
MLB amateur draft.
Yeah, they fell in love with Mookie. They did, you know, they do that neuro scouting that they were among the first ever to do. And they were doing in Boston where you like, you're basically letting them play video games of a sort that has a data collection component to it and seeing how good their instincts are at certain things mentally, how good their brain reacts to certain things. I'll find the story and tweet it out here in a little bit. But Mookie Betts destroyed their leaderboard on the neuro scouting. They were like, oh my God. This guy, just in terms of like how his brain approached puzzles, approached athletics, that kind of stuff that they were doing, and they were among the first team to do it. Mookie Betts just absolutely blew them away.
It's too bad that you quit Hit and Run, because we look at this draft a lot on Hit and Run. I'm going to read you the first round real quick.
Okay.
Garrett Cole, number one, 2011.
Uh-huh.
Danny Hulson to Seattle, Trevor Bauer to Arizona, Dylan Bundy to Baltimore, Bubba Starling to KC, Anthony Rendon to Washington, Archie Bradley to Arizona, Frankie Lindor to Cleveland, Javi Baez to the Cubs, Corey Spangenberg to the Padres, George Springer to Houston, Brandon Nimmo to the Mets, Jose Fernandez to the Marlins.
Oh, my God.
Sonny Gray to Oakland.
This is round one.
Tyler Anderson to Colorado. Colton Wong.
Anderson did have a nice breakout this year.
Colton Wong to St. Louis. Blake Swihart to Boston. Joe Panik to San Francisco.
Wow.
That's just Jackie Bradley to the Red Sox in a supplemental pick. That's just some of what took place. Michael Fulmer to the Mets.
Most times.
Trevor Story to Colorado.
MLB drafts, round ones, do
Joe
not.
Joe Musgrove release. To Toronto. These are all supplemental. Blake Snell, Dante Bichette Jr. Those are all supplemental picks. Jace Peterson. Sorry, go ahead.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's just the first round in the supplemental picks.
We tried to redraft it.
And Joe made fun of me. Because I still wanted Jose Fernandez, even though he was dead.
This guy and he said, here is dead.
He said, you're
well,
you're,
scratch him off.
He
then.
Said, you're drafting a dead guy. I said,
he's
I
right.
Said, true, fair enough, but I'm still taking him 1-1.
I'm just glad for you that Joe hasn't quit on you yet.
He's tried.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Give it time. Everybody finds a way, Barry. Everybody finds a way. This has been a really nice night to remind myself of why I quit. It's been really good for me. Just to remember why I did it.
It's not my fault. You invented this hypothetical Addison Russell deal and couldn't explain any function of it to me. Like why or for whom, when, or what the purpose was.
I don't think those things matter. I think those are overrated, Barry. Come on, man.
I was just asking for a little information.
I listen to sports radio. Why? Logic has gone out the window.
Why'd you have nine 20-year-old girls in your apartment?
Because my two stepdaughters, I have two steps now. My lovely fiery Latina has brought these two young ladies into my life, and I am a very proud and happy stepfather. I get to have relationships with these young girls. Very cool. They went to Lollapalooza last weekend and used our home downtown as their base.
Wow.
And they slept over, and I made breakfast a couple of mornings, and I tried not to be the weird stepfather, but...
That's impossible.
Impossible, so I was the kooky stepdad making breakfast and stuff. But they and their friends, at one point, there were nine of them. At one point, nine. But they each had two that slept over, so there was like six of them in the house most nights and mornings. But at one point, there were nine of them. All game planning and prepping for Lollapalooza, getting their liquor together, getting their backpacks together with everything they needed. And it was awesome. It was so cool to give them like this nice home base.
Those are grown-up people.
Yes.
You're used to just a little guy.
Yes.
These are grown-up people.
And to be like a safe harbor for them, yeah. So you can go out and have fun at Lollapalooza and come back and crash at your parents' pad downtown was very fun. But yeah. I will say, when they came home at the end of the night, They smelled terrible. Girls or boys, it turns out you put 9 20-year-olds at Lollapalooza for 11 hours on a hot day.
Yeah.
They come back smelling terrible.
You have a lot to look forward to. Not professionally, but otherwise, you have a lot to look forward to.
I've known that for 4 months now, and this was a nice reminder.
Do you want to tell me why there's like 8 harmonicas falling out of your bag, or should we just leave that as a mystery?
Tributosaurus becomes Bob Dylan tomorrow night at Wire in Berwyn, and I'm playing 6 different harmonicas on the show.
I don't even know why you would need more than one, but, you know, I'm ignorant along those lines.
They come in different keys. They come in different keys, Barry. You're culinarily and musically ignorant.
And topographically, probably.
Topographically
although
speaking.
Although I'm pretty good at that.
Hey, you knew all sorts of Badland stuff.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that.
Thanks, man. It was fun. Tony Gill and Herb Lawrence, thank you, guys. Really enjoyed it. You guys always make it fun. Julie DeCaro is up next. I'm back here on Sunday. Me and Matt Spiegel Sunday for like 2.5 hours, 4 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. before Cubs and Nationals. And, of course, Barry will be here Sunday morning for Hit and Run. He and Joe Ostrowski from 9 to noon. Keep it here on 670 The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.